I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. Colorado Springs Switchbacks are hosting the USL Championship Final this Saturday, albeit at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. Northern Colorado Hailstorm are up in the air, as is their future. And the Colorado Rapids have 1 week left to finalize their offseason roster decisions. But the United States and Canada are moving on in the CONCACAF Nations League, so yay for Moise and Christian Pulisic, albeit with some curious post-goal celebrations. Joining me now to talk about his turkey prep for next week, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
We're going to make brisket. Nobody in my family likes turkey, so I'm going to make brisket and matzo ball soup and a cake. I don't know what cake I'm making. I picked out three possibilities with Aster. That's my younger child who bakes. We watch the Great British Baking Show, and then we get really excited that we bake stuff. And I like pies, and I like treats, like little puff pastry, kind of like small tart type kind of things. And Aster likes cakes, like layer cakes with like, you know, three, you know, where you have to make three kinds of like layers, and then you have to do filling, and then you got to put, frosting.
You
got to
put the beef
top.
In the trifold, Mark.
No, it's not my jam. It's not how I like to do things, but whatever. So, I think, what did I go through? So here are my four, and I almost want to do a poll. Although social media has melted down, so I don't even know where we would post a poll. We're currently now on Threads, Instagram,
Blue Sky.
Are we on Blue Sky? We're on Blue Sky.
I'll get us on Blue Sky. We will be on Blue Sky by the time this thing gets published.
Oh my god, that's ridiculous. We're on Facebook, so I manage the Facebook and the Threads. Matt manages one Instagram account and I manage another, but the only reason I started an Instagram account was because in order to start a Threads account, you have to have an Instagram account, and then we have an X account, which we're not really happy about because... And we're lurkers on Reddit. We're not going to start our own sub on Reddit because that doesn't make any sense. But we're always hanging out on Reddit.
This
but anyways,
this would be here, a fun Mark. This would be a fun Ask HTHO, or this
oh
would
God.
Be a fun listeners. If you are a regular on Rapids Reddit, if you can email us, if you think you've identified Mark's username.
Well, I'm very obvious. My picture's up there. I'm just like straight up.
Okay, mine is not. Mine is the most indiscreet one. If you
nice.
Think you have identified
Stale Rhino 324. Yeah. No, so wait. So here's the poll. Here's the three cakes that I'm excited about. And I think the listeners should vote. And then my kid will do whatever they want. Mississippi Mud Pie, Earl Grey Tea Cake with dark chocolate and orange zest, or almond berry layer cake. Now, I'm excited about all three of these. I can't lose. I personally want the challenge of an Earl Grey tea cake, but I'm excited about all these. So, listeners, Mississippi Mud Pie, Earl Grey tea cake, or almond berry layer cake. Your pick. And then the winning vote gets a whole cake mailed to their house. No, just kidding.
I love me some Earl Grey tea, Mark. I don't know how well that transitions into from a cake standpoint.
Have you ever had matcha in a cake, like a matcha
yes.
cake?
Yes.
It's very similar. Like you just have this like kind of like light tea flavor in a sweet bready thingy. It works. It's really nice.
So if
it's
I
gotta
if
be
I'm
subtle though.
if I'm thinking about just the general palette options you have, and you are not a normal family, Mark, or you're not the typical family when it comes to...
Clearly, that we're not. We're not just making apple pie or pumpkin pie. But so nobody, in my family nobody in my family likes pie, except me. It's weird.
Okay, so Mark, generally speaking, so we've got brisket instead of turkey. We've got matzo ball soup. What is the cranberry sauce or other sugary options as well? Because if there's nothing sweet...
Cranberry sauce. I'll get the can and I'll slice it.
Yes.
And that's how it's done. I love that.
Okay.
And we'll probably make a stuffing because stuffing is rad. There's no beating stuffing. The challenge is stuffing. And the good thing about stuffing is this. Turkey gravy is good. But beef gravy is better, and if you make beef brisket, you've got beef gravy. So there you go. You've got beef gravy and stuffing. You're like living your best life.
Well, as a vegetarian, I prefer no animal products.
Well, the great thing about veggies is like, you've got mushroom gravy, and mushroom gravy is so good. I mean, like biscuits and mushroom gravy is probably almost better than chicken gravy on briskets. Almost better, but not quite. Anyway.
And I love me. My mom always gets the same tofurkey, I think, from Whole Foods, Mark.
Nice.
Yeah, so I always really like that. And then obviously everything else, with the exception of the turkey, is easily avoidable. Or you can do vegetarian via subtraction. But so, Mark, you don't have a lot of other sweet options in terms of the greater the spread. So I'm going to go Mississippi mud pie if I'm voting between those three options.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. I might do some yams, but I wind up usually. I've done a really nice like coconut and spicy sriracha yam, but mostly like the yams are something that I eat. Nobody else does. So that's the challenge of Thanksgiving. Is like we don't live near family and we don't go away, that means that like I cook everything. So. It's kind of nuts.
Mark, since last we podcasted, there was an election, and now former President Donald Trump is now also President-elect Donald Trump, so he'll be having his second term and just the second president to not serve them consecutively after Grover Cleveland, for those of you who won that pub trivia question. So, Mark, we just wanted to acknowledge that that happened, and listeners, you have a right to feel however it is that you want about that. There are other people who are more politically inclined for you to go to for your punditry on that front. So we are here to be your American soccer echo chamber, not necessarily your political echo chamber. I will say, Mark, there's one thing that did happen in the aftermath of this. Last night, listeners, the United States defeated Jamaica in the second leg of their Nations League qualifier round in. And after scoring a goal for the U.S. to help them see off their win, Christian Pulisic did the Donald Trump, the arm back and forth dance, Mark, that I think he normally does at the end of his rallies to the YMCA dance. I'm not someone who has watched a lot of Donald Trump rallies in the last couple of weeks, so I'm not the expert on this in particular. And Pulisic has since commented on that, saying, quote, why that? Well, I just thought it was funny. So that's kind of brought into some questions, Mark. White guy from rural Pennsylvania, given the way that Pennsylvania went. I don't know, Mark, you were the Pennsylvania voter, not me in this situation, if you want to speak to that particular situation. But Pulisic doing that, given maybe the makeup of his teammates and experiences and the ways in which a second Trump presidency could affect them or affect their greater families, I think is something that other people have commented on that I'm not going to bring on that. Mark, I'll leave the floor to you if you want to turn this into PIDS Save America. Or we can just move on. That's fine, too.
Well, I mean, I think one of the challenges about soccer, and this is, you know, I'm going to be semi, you know, politics adjacent because that's not our lane. We need to stay in our lane. But soccer trends towards kind of a pro-international, pro-liberal kind of progressive type of fan, even if you don't vote that way, even if you're a moderate, even if you're a conservative. The other fans are treated that way. And so I think one of the challenges of American soccer for the next 4 years is there's always this kind of like lowbrow anti-soccer, pro-American football, pro-American baseball kind of idea that I believe originates out of the political conservative class of America. Like, I don't think liberals in America think soccer is anti-American. Like, that's just it's kind of an inconsistent philosophy. So all I'm saying is this: soccer doesn't get treated well by the kind of farthest right elements in politics, which are clearly in their ascendancy right now. So we're going to hear a lot of like nasty things about, you know, the like, you know, the World Cup is going to be in the United States in just a couple years. And it's going to be weird. It's going to be treated weirdly. Like we're going to, I think the U.S. is likely at their very best to make the quarterfinals, or maybe if they're unbelievably good, the semifinals. And it's not going to be good enough for the people in America who, you know, fly red, white, and blue from their pickup trucks and don't follow soccer because they don't realize how good the rest of the world is and that they all had literally like a 100-year head start on soccer leagues in their countries, right? Like the first British team was started like 1874 and MLS started in 1996. Like we're it's a long way to get there. So anyways, that's just an annoyance. We've been through this before, Matt. We started podcasting under Trump 1, right? So
yeah, 2018.
Yeah. So, but it was the tail end of it. So it was the middle
halfway,
of it. So
midterms.
Yeah, I know. So we're familiar with this, but you know, there'll be a little bit of cringe here and there where people will say dumb things about soccer, but you know, you and I will just shrug and keep our heads down and hope that the PIDs are better in 2025.
Yeah, and hopefully, Mark, you're not getting spammed with the rhetoric of, you know, people. Who was the guy who was always tweeting at you? Like, you said something absolutely innocuous, nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with Israel-Palestine, and this same meme account would just say, like, kick Israel out of FIFA. I hope that person doesn't find you on Threads or Blue Sky.
Well, the crazy thing about that guy was that he used to be a lurker in Burgundy Wave. He was on the OG Burgundy Wave back when I was a writer for Burgundy Wave, and I haven't written for Burgundy Wave since I think 2017. Mm-hmm. So that was a long time ago. But yeah, no, to be honest, I don't have nearly as much trouble on social media and on regular kind of conversation about American politics as I do with Israeli politics. So being an American Jew right now is and being a professional Jew, like a rabbi, and then someone who actually publishes like op-eds on the war in Israel and gives sermons about it. It's hard times, man. I'm almost universally not liked by someone in every room that I walk into. And that's a weird feeling. That's a super, you know, that's a part of being an American rabbi that I didn't really anticipate. But one of the things that they say, and I'll end on this, which is like, if they hate you, you're doing something right. Like, there's always people who are kind of like on the side of corporatism or money or evil or oppression or suffering or whatever. And those people tend to be people who I piss off. So if I'm pissing those people off, then I should probably sleep okay at night because I'm pissing off the right people. But back to soccer.
Speaking of pissing people off, Atlanta United defeated Lionel Messi and Inter Miami in the best of three series. And Mark, we had
the best segue you've ever had in 6 years of this podcast. Amazing.
No, disagree, Mark. You remember season one, you mentioned that we were gonna, it was the same, it was Anthony Hudson football, and it was the exact same loss, like three games in a row were the exact same game. And, you said like you know, we're basically, you know, Matt, let's transition to recapping last week's game and we're going to beat a dead horse. And I said, on that note, Mark, let's get sued by PETA. But in any case, Mark,
that was good.
Eastern Conference bracket went completely not chalk. Top four teams were all out. Columbus and Miami, who were probably two of the favorites, they were out. Cincinnati, who I would say had kind of had a downturn in the final third of the season, also out. And then Charlotte, who were a very, very likable dark horse, Christian Kalina, very good defensive soccer, didn't make it out. So we have the four bottom seeds making it through in the East, relatively chalky in the West, Mark. But so in any case, our four conference semifinals that we have, or I guess quarterfinals proper, are we have a Hudson River Derby, NYCFC versus New York Red Bulls, the first time they have met in an MLS Cup playoffs. These teams have met in a cup competition, an open cup.
So exciting.
Before.
Very cool.
We've got LAFC and Seattle nemesis that have gone back years and years. Orlando is taking on Atlanta in March. So what was it? I can't remember what Orlando, Miami is, but I believe Orlando and Atlanta on social media has been called the Waffle House tussle. So, nice. I mean, if this is going to be anything like an actual fight that happens at Waffle House that I may or may not have witnessed, I'm here for it.
And they were rivals before Miami and before Charlotte came in.
Correct.
And so now that those teams are in, they kind of like rejiggered the rivalries. But like, I think that that's a, someone said this week on the radio here in Pittsburgh that the Baltimore Ravens were the arch rivals of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I was like, they are? I had no idea. But I guess if you want, you can have a couple rivals. Because remember, like LA Galaxy have San Jose, and now they also have LAFC. So, like, you know, there's a lot of different. There's the old school rivalry. There's the new school rivalry. For Colorado, it's pretty much just Salt Lake because there's nothing else around.
Well, Kansas City before that, I'd say, Mark. And I'd say there's a general, there's a one-way rivalry in terms of, I think, Rapids fans, you know, like try to punch up to Seattle, try to punch up to LA Galaxy. But that's very much the madman meme of the, like, the, you are my nemesis, I will defeat you, LA Galaxy, just like we did in 2010. And Galaxy are like, we never think about you, you're the Rapids. Any case, LA Galaxy are playing Minnesota United. So, Mark, we have to amend our prediction, because I believe we both had Inter Miami defeating Ricky Pooj and LA Galaxy. So, Mark, who do we have coming out of the East? Who do we have coming out of the Western Conference? And who's winning Cup, given Miami and Columbus are out?
Well, it's kind of boring to be all excited about LAFC, but it's hard not to be excited about LAFC because they keep doing things. But LAFC have to get past the Sounders, and the Sounders have this magical way of kind of pulling stuff off. So I am still, I guess, going Galaxy over LAFC in the Western Conference ultimately. Boy, that Eastern Conference, though, it's the 6th seed, the 7th seed, the 4th seed, and the 9th seed. It's like, it's not even that Miami got knocked off. Miami got knocked off. Columbus got knocked off, the 2 seed. Cincinnati got knocked off, 3 seed. Orlando got by Charlotte. It's just a very weird... Yeah, I think... You know, just basically Atlanta's luck has got to run out. I mean, they had to, their goalkeeper, Brad Guzan, had to stand on his head in order to get past it. And the goal, the game-winning goal, or maybe it was the tying goal, was just an absolute fluke of a headed kind of poppy ball, like up in the air. So I don't know. I've always liked the way NYFC plays football, but I don't really know their players very well this year. I think I've watched NYFC twice this year. They added a few players at the deadline that made me like not fully aware of them and so on. And then the Red Bulls are like even more confusing in that their roster turnover has been tremendous over the last 3 years, and it's really hard for me to identify anybody. So I gotta be honest, like I actually watch a fair amount of Eastern Conference soccer because it's my warm up to, you know, the 9 p.m. start time for the Colorado Rapids game, as it is here in the Eastern Conference. And there's really not a single one of these four teams that I feel really, really confident in and comfortable in and knowledgeable of. So, I mean, it is absolutely flip a coin time. I guess I'll go with NYCFC just because their brand, their style of soccer has been really, really tight. They play really well at home on those tight fields. And then they've always had a really good job of kind of like possession and moving the ball. And so that's where they're at this year. But all of their best players are guys that I'm like, are kind of like new to me this year. I'm just not as familiar with their lineup as I used to be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. I think it will still be LA Galaxy defeating LAFC in El Trafico in what I have pegged as the Western Conference final, and LA Galaxy will win that MLS Cup final, which they'll host regardless of which Eastern Conference team comes out. I have no idea, Mark. I'm going to go chalk on this one and just say it's Orlando because they're going to be home for the conference semifinal, and then no matter which one of the New York teams they would play, they would also be at home. Oscar Pereja is a good coach, and Facundo Torres is a young, exciting player. But yeah, I have no idea. You could sit here and tell me in 2 weeks' time, you know, Mark from 2 weeks from now could pop into out of a time machine that appears in my living room right now and say, hey, Matt, so-and-so came out of the Eastern Conference and is playing LAFC or LA Galaxy in the MLS Cup final. And I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, there's nothing, they're all four of these teams are so similar to each other, or so it's unsurprising that any of them got this far in the playoffs, that I have no idea who it's going to be. And that makes it fun because this is MLS and it's chaos and we have no idea what's going to happen. But also it's none of the fun, exciting, you know, of these four teams. Mark, is the biggest star that we have left, Emil Forsberg, who just came back off of injury for New York Red Bulls. Whereas at least I'll say not Minnesota, obviously, I guess Robin Ludd. But I mean, at least the other three teams you have in the West is going to have an exciting star. And if they host an MLS Cup, you know, it's going to be a huge event. So I'd argue
that it's just like, by comparison to the guys in the league who've been awesome, he doesn't even rate. Like, Emil Forsberg is a guy that you and I know because we play a bit of FIFA and we watch a lot of international football. But like, his first year was good. But I don't think he had, I mean, he was so overshadowed by so many other big players in the league. And it made it really hard for him to kind of like establish himself. I mean, you had the whole Columbus narrative. You had Messi in the Eastern Conference. You had Puig in the West. You had the Pids doing Pid things. You had the meaty French forehead of Olivier Giroud coming in to LAFC. I mean, there were so many interesting things going on in the league, and he just didn't rate. So, but like by comparison, like I'm looking at the NYCFC lineup finally, and it's Keaton Parks and it's James Sands, two guys who we talked about a little bit a while ago. Thiago Martins, who's been with them a couple years and is kind of like slowly establishing himself. But the real star of that show, based on advanced metrics, his G minus XG was the best, I think, in Major League Soccer, is goalkeeper Matt Freese. Matt Freese absolutely put on low-key one of the best seasons in amongst any of the goalkeepers in MLS this year. So that's a reason to watch NYCFC. Mute. You're on mute.
Mark, shall we move on to Colorado-related things?
We shall. I mean, I kind of like watching the playoffs, and I definitely don't like the international break that's messing with it. So that's been no fun.
So, Mark, we'll start with, we've got some USL Colorado-related stuff that I guess we wanted to touch on, even though we don't normally cover these teams as closely as we cover the Rapids. We'll start with the bad one to then end on the good note here, Mark. Rabbi, there is a valid question as to what is the future of Northern Colorado Hailstorm. There was some rumblings going on in the summer about delays with their training facility and their whole complex of their building that included their actual modular minor league ballpark that they were also going to play soccer games on. Functionally, Mark, Hailstorm this year, and I think part of last year, were playing on what is a slightly souped up like little league or minor league baseball park, if that. And they were making it work. They were doing a good job with that circumstances. There were delays in construction. Some of that had to do with COVID. Some of that had to do with supply chain issues as well. But now much more stuff has come out. I want to credit bizwest.com, which has reported on a lot of this stuff. And supposedly now there are lenders who are lending money in order for Future Legends Complex and Hailstorm and the minor league or the independent baseball team, the Northern Colorado Owls, coming due. And supposedly there's $45 million worth of loan payments that are due on that front. USL came out with a statement on November 14th saying that they have terminated the franchise agreement with Hailstorm. So something clearly happened on the league front, not just on the us building our facilities, dealing with local governments, trying to get stuff there. Mark, you've got something?
Yeah, the reporting by a couple folks who cover MLS, I think this was Mike Pendleton, but it might have been somebody else who was originally covering Tampa Bay, was that the league had been paying the salaries for the Hailstorm.
I have heard that as well.
For the last couple of months, because they couldn't pay their bills. And so I think the assumption was they probably like missed a pay cycle or two, and the league were like, we'll cover you. This is conjecture, this is just my guessing. And then they just weren't generating any revenue and their owners were flat broke, and the league assumed them, and they weren't generating, they were a huge in the red on the books, and the league was like, we don't have the money to just give money away to moribund franchises whose owners can't handle their business. And then on top of that, there's problems with the facility, which I think you probably know more about than me. So
yeah, so there's been some local stuff, Mark, in terms of some of them getting permits. Some of that is kind of understandable. So it's been there's been a confluence of issues going on that is not necessarily them paying their bills in order to physically get like the concrete and the rebar and the steel in order to actually get this thing up from a structural standpoint. But all of this kind of begets the question, Mark, of you know, of is this ownership group fit and fair in terms of, to use the Premier League or the English FA approach to it, of are they actually in a position in order to financially afford what they promised this community in terms of a community facility and what they promised ultimately the league that they got a franchise ownership stake in USL League One in terms of fitting in with what their goals were from a stadium standpoint, from an operating budget standpoint, all of those things. I don't have answers on this, Mark. Obviously, everyone involved in this at this point has issued a statement, finger pointing. I should point out as well, Mark, that Hailstorm are actually in the process of suing the USL because they did not get their winners' money for winning the USL Jägermeister Cup back in September, I think it was. So, but between the reporting and what I've also heard, Mark, that the USL was playing the players, it's like if we're paying the players, like, and if that's more than what your winner's cut was for you winning a first year cup competition, then we'll just, you know, we'll lower the bill of what you owe us rather than give you the money and assume that you're actually putting that money towards your existing debt. So there's a lot of finger pointing, Mark. There's a lot of legal stuff that is going to happen. We're going to find out who's wrong on this, as we're going to find out who's wrong on this through the legal process as well. I've had a number of really good interactions with Casey Katanowski, who's the CFO, CEO, he's the owner's son at Future Lessons. He has said all the right things that I appear. There's confidence within the organization that the club is going to exist as well. But this kind of is a question of who's messed up on this front, and is this ownership group really in a position to promise what they've promised for a number of reasons? And all of this stuff coming out, to say nothing of the league saying, you know, Mark, you know the USL better than I do with the Riverhounds. The USL at every single level of its division, every single year for like the last decade, has lost a team due to owners didn't want to pay any more money, or they went homeless because they couldn't find a facility, or they just, you know, they couldn't afford to keep playing in a minor league baseball park that was not viable for them and had 2,000 or 3,000 people a game. So for a league in that situation that is trying to grow, that's trying to get more markets, that has a really good situation with Colorado Springs, that was trying to grow also in a northern Colorado, to not only say, like, we are willing to contract, giving that contraction is one of our issues because you're such a bad thing for us as well, like, immediately is a red flag. So I don't know what's going to happen here. Hailstorm said that they plan to continue. I don't know where they go from here, Mark, because if they're clearly not ready, you know, unless the stadium's ready, they weren't in any way situation going to the USL Championship. Obviously, USL League One kicked them out, so they're not going there. Do they drop down a division? Could they go to UPSL geographically? I don't know. Mark, is NISA still in existence? Like, I don't know. This might be a club without an entity. You know, this is going to be like a Rio OKC, if you remember that meme from like 8 years ago, Mark. So I don't know where we go from here, from that front. We said initially, before we talked to anybody associated with the organization, when the news came out on here, that if nothing else, and all they did was build this facility and then go bust in 5 years, this would be a usable community facility to make soccer more accessible to people in northern Colorado. That bubble dome still exists. They've got outdoor pitches. There's kids playing on it. So that is a good thing, Mark. But yeah, it's a sad day for soccer in Colorado, given what was planned from a rendering and a marketing standpoint, what I think was certainly possible there. And sad with the fact that, Mark, you had 2 straight years of making the playoffs. I think a really good up-and-coming head coach in Amon Zaid. Them making it to a conference final last year, them winning a cup competition this year, and this being a viable team in the community on the field as well, and potentially the situation of ownership not having their ducks in a row, or maybe being misleading in terms of their monetary ability to have this happen. Like, could this have secretly been a USL 2 or a, I don't know what the lower division options are at this point, Mark, but like the ones that, who is Vermont Green that Nate Jones would have played for? What division are they, Mark?
I don't remember. Were they? I feel like they were in NISA, but I could be wrong.
This could have been an Azteca, Mark. This could have been an MLS Next Pro team. Like the fact that, like, was this Icarus who flew too high to the sun and now a $45 million loan bill is due? I'm not sure. This is all conjecture. News is bad. Mark, your thoughts, bearing in mind that our HDHL lawyers are obviously listening in and providing counsel.
No, I mean, thanks. I mean, we're just spitballing whether what the survival options are for a team like this. The basic survival option is a national survival option for all soccer clubs nationwide if they have developed a youth and women's division, which is go back to having a kind of top flight men's amateur group that play in some version of the lowest tier of the U.S. Open qualifiers. So that's what's called the USASA. That's the NPSL, the USPL, and then there is NISA, which still exists, but NISA, I think, had 8 teams this year, and 3 of them failed to finish their schedules because they went broke. So NISA's in really bad shape, and I find them to be a frustrating league because they made big promises and they've never really fulfilled them. I think the other problem with NISA is really practical and simple, which is it's really hard to look at the 8 teams in NISA and know where they play. One of them's called Force. One of them's called Flower City. One of them's called, I mean, I don't remember, but like they keep naming teams after not the city that they live in, after some random object. And I'm like, that's not good branding. It's like really simple. So for me, the league that I've always kept an eye on in Colorado, although since I left, it's changed a little bit. Some teams have dropped in, some teams have dropped out, is the Colorado Premier League. And the Colorado Premier League has put a bunch of teams in U.S. Open Cup over the years. And I actually went out and covered a couple games in the time back when I lived there. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, they played on public fields and, you know, it was a bunch of guys sitting on their coolers with their camping chairs. And if you were lucky, there was like a lady selling tamales out of a hot pot on top of a grill. That would be a good option for them, but you can only survive as an amateur team if you generate revenue by having youth division and coaching and all this other stuff. And I don't really know whether Hailstorm built that out. I feel like they went the other way. They went top down instead of bottom up. I feel like building bottom up with soccer teams is a good way to go because you have kind of like solid financing across the board. The Riverhounds, for example, have a boys and a girls academy. They're one of the 4 best youth soccer clubs in the Pittsburgh metropolitan area. That's pretty common around the Eastern East Coast, where you get an ECNL. That's the a high level youth soccer league for boys and girls on this side of the country. It's below the MLS level, but probably above the USL level. So if you have that, you have parents who are paying, you know, $1,500, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 a year for soccer, for coaches, and to rent the facilities, and for all those other things. So you don't have to have that much more money because you've got your nut on the facility from youth soccer. And then you go out and you pay a couple more players, and all you really need is to cover their labor with gate costs and with the USL TV revenues, if there are any, and ad revenues. So somehow Hailstorm didn't do that. And so I think that's the lesson, which is build a club, build a men's amateur and a women's amateur, and a youth division at multiple levels. Use your amateurs as coaches. Grow the brand, you know, establish yourself, you know, get to the point where you can own your own field. And then from there you can kind of grow. But like these guys went the other way. They got, you know, a millionaire or a couple millionaires to kind of go in. They built a fancy field, you know, they took out big loans. They couldn't afford, you know, I don't know how much revenue they thought they were going to bring in. Clearly they didn't bring it in and it didn't work out.
Flower City Union are in Rochester, New York. They won NISA in 2023 and then folded in the offseason, did not even defend their title. Even the club that follows the Rochester Raging Rhinos, Mark, cannot survive in lower division American.
They
soccer.
Did a weird thing. I forget what it was. They did a weird thing where like they half merged with another team where like they played like for like last season, they played half their games in Rochester and half their games in, I want to say like Toronto or Buffalo or like Allentown or something like that. And they changed names when they were. So it was the same roster, two different teams. It was really weird. NISA is just not doing it well. No matter what, if it's being done poorly, it's NISA.
The club began play in 2022 and finished last in a 9-team league. For 2023, they merged with the Syracuse Pulse to form a singer club that split its home matches between Rochester as Flower City Union and Syracuse as Salt City Union.
Yeah.
Oh, it my was really, God.
I remember reading about it, and I was like, who thought of this? This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, right? I mean, that's the same idea as the Buffalo Bills playing some of their games in Toronto every year, except if the Buffalo Bills changed their name to the Toronto Argonauts while they were in Toronto, just to confuse everybody.
Oh my God.
I know! And me should run a soccer club because morons can do this. Morons can do this, and I'm at least smarter than these people.
We're at least smarter than one person who owns a social media platform that's going downhill, Mark. Mark, let's talk about good things. Let's talk about happy things here in Colorado soccer, because Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC, in their 10th season of existence in the USL Championship, are in their first final. They are hosting the USL Championship final at Widener Field in Colorado Springs this Saturday. They're taking on Rochester, Rhode Island FC, who are in their first year in the USL, Mark. And I was at the conference final that they had last Saturday. It was bitter cold, and they played Las Vegas Lights FC. Yosuke Hanya had a bit of an injury, Mark, so unfortunately he had to come off the bench, but the guy who came in for him was Juan Tejada, who scored a great goal off of a set piece, and they made some really, really good defensive play, Mark. And James Chambers, who's the first-year head coach for Switchbacks, was an absolute meme in the post-game media availability, Mark. I had never interacted with him directly. I came up, introduced my outlet, shook his hand, and he made some joke about how, oh, finally, Burgundy Waves come down to cover our game because there's a final, and I'm a bandwagon media person. Immediately laughs in
Ouch.
My face. Says that it's all a joke. He hugged me afterwards and everything, and he had a hilarious quote, Mark, that should probably become a drop on this podcast of, just asked about the nature of the game and the fact that it was a conference final and both teams were desperate to play, and that made for not aesthetically pleasing soccer. And he summed it up as, they were S and we were S and we won. So it was an absolute meme, Mark. There is a player with a Rapids connection on this team in the form of Yosuke Hanya. This is a club that has had many Rapids connections, has had an affiliation with the Rapids in the past as well. I would say, Mark, absolutely, if you were to pull Colorado Rapids fans, 90% plus would say if they had a USL championship team, it would be Switchbacks, and they're playing in a final. The only thing that is not fun about this, Mark, Rabbi, you might know that there's been a select number of marquee USL games that have been on over-the-air linear television as they try to expand and grow their market share. So this game is going to be live on big CBS, Mark. Rabbi, do you want to guess what the Mountain Time kickoff time is on Saturday for this match? Given that CBS has college football to play in the afternoon.
Oh, it's going to be a morning game?
It is at 10 a.m. Mountain Time.
That's not ideal, but it's not so bad here, especially considering how cold it's going to be. And is the final in Colorado? It is, right?
It is at Widener Field, yes.
It's so exciting. Are you going to go?
Yes, I've sent my credential application, Mark. I should say, the press box is borderline a walk-in closet with windows,
yeah.
Rabbi.
Oh, I cover USL. Trust me, I know.
Okay, Rabbi, so here's a question. How many people plausibly can be seated and have desk space and have an outlet in the Pittsburgh Riverhounds setup? How many independent media can they accommodate for a situation like
so
that?
So I real quick, I covered the Western Pennsylvania High School soccer championships at the beginning of the month, which was a lot of fun, by the way. I also covered the state tournament. The local high school made it to the quarterfinals of the state tournament. Like, literally three kids who were members of my synagogue were on the field. It was really fun to be reporting on people who I'll see at synagogue the next day. But anyways, the press box usually has two sections, which can seat about six people each. each side of the double sided. There's four suites in the press box. And then for the high school championship, somebody like the broadcasters took one of them. So you could only have like six people in one of them. So that was it. So on a good day, the USL press box can hold 12. How about in Colorado Springs, Matt?
So, Mark, we are not counting seats that are going to like someone who's operating and running the game, right? So there is a seat for the person who operates the scoreboard. That is a club employee. That's not an independent media person. You can fit about three or four people in the situation that we have at Switchbacks, and the two seats to on one side, Mark, are semi-blocked by a wall and are not seeing much of the final third on, I guess that would be the north side of the stadium. So I've submitted my application, Mark. This is going through the USL Championship, not through the club directly. Is someone coming from Rhode Island? I'm not sure. Are there people from the league that are coming? Are there other larger outlets that are coming this? So I'm not sure if I'm going to get it or what that situation is going to look like. Are we going to be outside? So we'll see what happens. I've submitted my application. The fact that this final is at 10 a.m. Mark is an absolute joke. I think, Rabbi, ironically, this is very, very similar to the circumstances that led to the Rapids having that home game in the playoffs on Thanksgiving in 2021, because one of the, I can't remember which of the TV channels it was. I think, was that game on Fox, Mark? Do you remember? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
In any case, the I think the linear TV wanted something in that spot, thought Thanksgiving was a viable option. And I reported on this separately, Mark. There are a bunch of reasons why this game was not going to be in the Eastern Conference. I won't go into details there. Email us if you want details on that, if you don't remember it. But so I think, Mark, what they were looking at is, you know, going down the stretch when they announced this, they saw that they had an open window slot for a game like that, and they wanted it at, and they saw that the Western Conference was going to come down to Seattle, Kansas City, or Colorado. And they knew, and I think what they were probably betting on is that Sounders games always do well when it is a home game in a primetime slot, and Kansas City looks nice on TV. So they were probably hoping that it was going to be Kansas City or Seattle. So they figured that on a holiday, those two teams will be able to sell out their stadium, and that is a viable option for general national media interest within the fan base, within general sports fans, and then whatever the visiting market that would be in that situation as well. And obviously, they didn't luck out in the sense that they got the third option with the Rapids, and there was a lot of concern, Mark, from a league level and from a and from a partnership level as to whether or not the Rapids were, you know, going to have empty seats for a home playoff game on a national holiday day. So I'm wondering, Mark, was CBS looking at this, seeing how stacked the Eastern Conference was, and hoping for a Louisville City or a Hartford's not that good. Mark, who else was good in the East this year?
Charleston and Charleston. Rhode Island, who were both who were in the final anyway.
Yeah. So I think they had to have been hoping that an Eastern Conference team was going to be hosting it, and then a noon kickoff locally makes some sense associated with that. But I mean,
interesting.
Mark, could you imagine if if one of the USL like Western Conference teams or one of the Pacific Time Zone teams was hosting this final? It was going to be at 9 a.m. So
Can you imagine if it had been like Monterey Bay versus Charleston? You got like two really like small towns, basically the two smallest towns represented.
Yeah, at 9 a.m. and not set up for a national broadcast at all. So
I mean, I think USL, one of USL's like minor problems is that they've focused on mid-tier American cities like Pittsburgh, and smaller like Rochester, and they haven't like capitalized on having like a second team in the bigger cities. So like you could have like an LA versus New York matchup if it were Brookhaven FC or Coney Island FC versus the Orange Counties or whoever else in LA, you know, Santa Monica Football Club, somebody like that would be really cool. But last thought really quickly, I'll be pulling for Rhode Island in this one. Two former Riverhounds are on the field in this match. It's Albert Dequa, who won the Golden Boot last year with the Riverhounds, and then they let him go because the Riverhounds don't like to pay money for players. And then Mark Ibarra, who was a really talented, very clever, hardworking midfielder. There was a connection also in the event that Switchbacks lost, which was that Las Vegas Lights, who also had Joe Zhao, who was a name from the past, for USMNT fans. But they also had in their lineup the other day Valentin Noel, who played for Pitt. So, you know, I've bounced around, and a bunch of these names are pretty familiar. In fact, the team that I know the least other than Hanya is probably the Switchback. So, you know, hopefully it'll be fun for you, Matt.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm excited, Mark. Obviously, I'm rooting for Switchbacks. I'm excited, Rabbi. This is the second USL final of the year that's going to take place in Colorado that I'll be covering. And we last time that happened, Mark, in the lower divisions would have been the Colorado Foxes hosting. So we'll see what happens. Wow. Obviously, Mark, with the USL, there's not a whole lot of cross-conference play. So correct me if I'm wrong, Rhode Island and Switchbacks have never actually played each other. So who knows who's good? Rhode Island was a...
Well, Rhode Island's only been around for 3 years, I think, maybe two. So they're a really new team. So yes, that is actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm gonna check that. I think it's possible.
I think they're in their first year, Mark.
I think I was about to say, I think this is their first year. I think I was thinking of Hartford, who are in their third year. But yeah, that's just nuts that you could do that, that you could build a team from scratch and win the league. Yeah, no, this was their first year. That's totally unfair. The Riverhounds have been around since 1999, and they've never won a trophy. So, they won the, I don't think they call it Supporter Shield. They call it the League Shield. But they also only invented they call it the Player Shield. They won the Player Shield last year when they had the best record in the league. But, I had an argument online about whether that was even a thing, because it was only either the first or the second year they'd ever even awarded the regular season champions with a trophy. So USL, we make it up as we go along, and we hope everything works out okay.
Yeah, so in any case, Mark, club in their first year of existence hasn't played any cross-conference play, so these teams have never played each other. Rhode Island was a lower-seeded team. They had to win, I believe, 3 road games in order to get here, Mark, so they're road warriors, but they're going to be traveling across the country. Obviously, there's no altitude games that they would have played at all in conference play, so then they're playing at just over 7,000 feet.
Charleston is not at altitude. It might actually be below sea level.
Yeah, so, the styles make fights, and lack of familiarity could lead to chaos. Again, to say nothing of the fact that players are probably getting up at 6:30 and eating breakfast at 7 a.m., for a 10 a.m. game. I have no idea what the crowd looks like for this situation as well, Mark, because chances are if it's 10 a.m. on a Saturday, your kids are either usually sleeping in or they've got some other activity, and then it's Saturday night that you have the game. How many afternoon random 1 p.m. kickoffs have we seen, Mark, where all the people that would normally be at a Rapids game are at their kids' game because their kids' game is, you know, right early in the afternoon? So I have no idea what to make of this final. It's a bit of a Frankenstein situation, but I'm really, really excited for it. Switchbacks are playing really, really well. Matt Mahoney's been fantastic for them. Ronaldo Dawson, I think the striker, has also been really, really good. And they have a really good goalkeeper, Zach Zandi, in the midfield as well. So this is an exciting young team, Mark. This is a team that has come together, certainly. And this is an opportunity for Switchbacks to, I think, make their mark on league in their 10th season of existence. And then also... and also do something really special for these players and a first-year head coach, and something that could elevate the club even further now that they've got an amazing stadium and a great atmosphere. I think it was, Mark, I think they had 17 regular season home games this year, and they sold out 10 of those. So does this lead to, you know, our Switchbacks potentially elevating themselves up in pedigree, similar to what we would normally consider a Phoenix Rising, a Louisville City, a Sacramento Republic, when we think about those big markets that have big expectations in the USL Championship? So hopefully the players are going to be really, really focused, Mark. And Mark, do you know how those players are going to be really, really focused for their final on Saturday?
Magic Mind.
Magic Mind, listeners, is the world's first performance mental shot. Mark and I have been taking them for several podcasts now. It's helped us calm down, it's kept us focused, and it's really helped, especially me, with my brain fog. Hopefully we seem a little bit more on topic. Magic Mind has a bunch of really great vitamins and superfoods, which can really help you with your mood and stress. It's a little 2-ounce green powder shot of goodness that really helps you with deep focus or getting your day back on track. As someone who's really caffeine sensitive, I don't have any issues with jitters, unlike I would if I was having coffee at 3 in the afternoon. They spent 10 years working on their formula and doing a bunch of research. We've been taking one daily for a few weeks now, and we can really tell the difference. Give Magic Mind a try by visiting the link in the show notes. You can use the unique discount code when you check out, Highliner 20. That's Highliner, all caps, then the number 20. That'll get you 20% off a single order, or if you subscribe, 48% off your first-time subscription order. Thank you to Magic Mind for sponsoring this episode and keeping us on topic. Marks, what's been your experience with Magic Mind?
I like it. It's been, I agree with you. It's been like a really mellow way to kind of like refocus in the afternoon. It's a good thing to go. I actually like to take it with a cup of coffee in the morning to just kind of like level it off and kind of like balance things out. So I actually like the taste too. I think it's really yum. It comes in a green thing that has kind of a grass matcha flavor that I quite like. It's good stuff. I can't wait to wake up tomorrow morning and chase another cup of coffee with it to get my day going.
With that, Mark, let's transition to a kind of off-season topic that we've been debating touching on as well. But now that the Rapid season is over and we've seen how the clubs handle things on the field, off the field, Mark, I think it's a useful exercise to look back, 14 months on from the supporters boycott, which would have been in the middle of September last year in the home game on Jameson night against New England Revolution, and posit the question, Mark, has the Colorado Rapids, have they done enough in terms of rebuilding the bridges that were burned last year with the fan base? And how much of that was just spending a bit of money and making the team competitive, and how much other stuff needs to happen? Obviously, we saw the Scran updates as well, Mark, which generally went well with the fans, but we haven't seen any big updates in terms of what the club's doing from an infrastructure standpoint in terms of future stadium plans. I had reported that that was something that was an emphasis this time last year when they would have had the season ticket member chat sessions or town halls, if you will. And then obviously there was the big open survey, which was available to anyone at the start of the new calendar year, in which fans voiced their concerns about the Scran, about ownership, level of commitment. They talked about Moldy Dix. I think, Mark, we're up into the low 30s in terms of number of pixels or panels on the video board that are not functioning perfectly from to the naked eye. So, Mark, I'll throw this. Which aspect of this do you want us to tackle first on this front? Where have you seen the club do a good job in terms of bringing fans back into the building? And where's maybe something that there's not clear evidence of, or that we still need more time in order to evaluate?
Porksmith understands that roster rebuilding is necessary when the season doesn't go very well. And I think that was a really difficult aspect of the last 2 years, which was that 2022 didn't go very well and 2023 didn't go very well. And there wasn't a lot of change from 1 year to the next. And so I think that that was probably the main reason why Rapids fans were so unhappy. 2022 went well, but they didn't make a lot of changes. And then 2023 went badly. So let me correct myself on that. So the differences that were made between 2023 and 2024 were going out and getting Zach Steffen, going out and getting Hafa Navajo, going out and getting Georgi Mihailovic, and all of those were high-level, big signings, and they spent money. He also just got really lucky with Moise Bombito, like stepping in and just being fantastic that year, and that is a really big deal. I think I put most of the team is doing better with fans on the team is doing better on the field, and Porksmith was able to kind of learn from his mistakes in the past. I will say this. I think Pork carried himself with a lot of confidence in his first couple of years because he needed to, I wouldn't say fake it till he made it, but like just project confidence so that people would believe that he was the man for the job. And I think that sometimes burned him, you know, in the sense that he would hold this like poker face, or he would hold this very like corporate position of like, you know, we're doing a great job here over at Kroenke Sports Entertainment. And it was like, no, you're not. You guys are terrible. You're not spending any money on the team, and you've made some really questionable trades. And then I think over the last couple of years, he's done a little bit better job of finding the language to communicate to the media and to the fans when things aren't good enough. Like, I think he's also found, I've never really criticize Porik on his communication skills regarding when things aren't going well. He would never say, we're going to defend this coach 100% because he's the right man for the job, even though he's lost every game this season. He would never say, you know, this coach has a guaranteed contract for life because he's been great for 8 games. Like, he's always hedging in the last couple of years in a way that seems logical. So I think that's part of it, which is that, one, there's been success. Two, Porik Smith has improved his communication skills and has been very cautious with the way he does things. The last question you asked me was a softball, which is like so easy because you teed it up for me without maybe you knew it, which was, what does this club still have to do? Well, we're still a low budget team, and having a busted Jumbotron, having no real changes to the stadium setup, no real changes to the plans going, no changes at all or no plans at all going forward for the future of the club and physical plant improvements. The stadium starting to look old. It's not that it's old, it's that it's falling behind the amenities that other stadia have created. I mean, even San Jose, which I visited this last year, which is a modest stadium, but it still seats, I think, like 6,000 more fans. It has some really neat amenities like bars and better luxury box seating. And I think it's also modular. Like, they can make some upgrades, and they are planning to make some upgrades down the road. Colorado doesn't have any plans for anything, as far as I know, in terms of big upgrades. You know, we've been joking about Victory Crossing forever. So those are all things that I think that the club could do, just invest some money in the physical plant of the building. And also kind of like recognize that there's some issues with like food service and so on.
Mm-hmm. You said, I think, everything in terms of what the club did from, I'll say, last year, 2023, to this year, 2024, Mark, in terms of improving things on the field. I agree with you. Showing a level of strength or a level of confidence was something that was important for Porik, especially, you know, this time last year, it was them appointing Chris Armas and everybody dragging, you know, that hire. There were two people who were confident, I think, when that happened and it came out publicly, and it was Porik Smith and Chris Armas. So, and then obviously making a bunch of really, really good moves in the window. We don't need to talk about that, obviously, but fantastic improvement in terms of raising the floor talent-wise and bringing in what I think, Mark, are the two best designated players that the Rapids have ever had in Georgi Mihailovic coming over, and then Rafael Navajo going from a loan move to then securing him permanently with a permanent transfer in the summer. And on top of that as well, Mark, also getting some really good contributions from some of the existing players. As you wrote in Backpass this week, looking at the numbers behind the Rapids, Cole Bassett was far and away from a number of analytics-based metrics, the best or the most important player for the Colorado Rapids. And the fact that the Rapids were able to make some money off of sending him to Europe, but then also have a mechanism for bringing him back, did the same thing with Sam Vines, did it with Zach Steffen on a free transfer, was good roster planning years out in the making in order to allow Cole Bassett's 2024 season, what is hopefully a best 11 season for him as a midfielder, is really well spoken. But to your point, Mark, I think a lot of the anxiety or the question that Rapids fans have about this offseason from an on-the-field standpoint is, we have seen the Rapids have fantastic individual seasons and then kind of rest on their laurels and then just assume running it back is going to work, and it does not work. 2016 into 2017, 2021 into 2022. A little bit more turnover in terms of moving on from some players after 2022. So, you know, Mark, where's the, you know, we've identified it. It's a center back for Moise Bombito. It's probably a winger to go on the right side for Kevin Cabral, and then probably a true D mid or some kind of foil for the three players that Chris Armas already had in the double pivot position. Those are three positions. If they don't feel them, then I think that's a concern as well, Mark. And that speaks to your point about the financial concerns of, even with as much money as the Rapids have spent, they're still in the bottom third, bottom quartile of MLS teams in terms of net spending. And so when it comes to what are the Rapids going to do when it comes to playoff time, chances are they're probably going to play a team eventually that has a Ricky Pooj, a Carlos Vela, maybe not Lionel Messi, a Cucho Hernandez. And it's not obvious that KSC is in any way in a position to get that player, so the Rapids are fighting fire with fire. And so, you know, how do they handle that? And so you know, the question that I've always had about the Rapids way, Mark, is do I think absolutely the Rapids can be a budget team that becomes a perennial playoff team in MLS? Yes, Sporting Kansas City did it. Philadelphia Union did it. Montreal, albeit with some turbulence, has done that as well. Do I think at the current spend rate that the Rapids are plausibly winning an MLS Cup in the next 5 years? Probably not. So, you know, what does that mean in terms of this cycle? And from a financial standpoint in the immediacy, Mark, is ownership looking at this as the check that they got from Nice for Moise Bombito, is that paying back ownership for the two DPs that they shelled out a bunch of money for? Or is that money that's going into a U22 center back signing or a U22 winger signing? Or is some of that money that they converted into GAM and then rolled over into 2025, is that money that's going to then make an interleague play that is a Kellen Acosta, Mark Anthony Kay, Kevin Cabral type signing? I don't know. We're going to find out. But, you know, if the Rapids don't make other big moves like they did last January and this coming January, that's going to affirm a lot of negative stereotypes that fans are already concerning about that. Let's turn to the infrastructure side, Mark, because there's a few things that I've heard some rumblings for. I haven't been able to confirm some of this, listeners, but so take this with a grain of salt. Mark, have you heard about what was going on with the season ticket holder parking into the immediate east of the stadium on the north side? Have you heard about this at all?
This is the first I've heard of it.
Okay, so there was, I don't remember the exact specifics of it, but I believe there was parking that either wasn't available for some of the last home games, or that season ticket holders were told that that parking wasn't going to be available for them in 2025. So that's led to some rumblings, Mark, of, is there something happening in that parking lot space? Could that be an expanded practice facility or an expanded training facility as an expansion or replacement for the large structure that we see on the north side of the stadium? Could that be another pitch? Is that something else that's going on with that? Is that some part of the Victory Crossing something or other? I'm not entirely sure. So there's been some rumblings on that I've heard, Mark. I've also heard that there's going to be some renovations to the north structure as well, which mostly serves as a first team training facility. And potentially the club is prioritizing facilities that are specific to the playing staff and the coaching staff over necessarily the fan experience. We already saw this earlier, Mark, when it was a couple of years ago now that the club would replace their stadium pitch at Dick's and then also the Field 20, the main training pitch. They've also replaced a few other grass pitches. And then the turf pitches that are immediately south of Dick's that are right next to the area where fans like to tailgate. So they've already done that in terms of some pitches, Mark. Are they also doing that in terms of the training facility, maybe something associated with UC Health, upgrading the gym, upgrading the locker room, upgrading the coaches' offices, video room, meeting rooms, media area, so we actually have a mix zone proper, Mark, that's not like the loading dock area? All good questions that I have as well. And my understanding is that's taking precedent over anything that they're doing on the south side of the stadium, anything that they would be doing with Dale's Bar, or what the club internally has been calling the West Tower, the large tiered structure, listeners, that has on the west side of the stadium, that includes the Summit Club on the second floor, and then the press and other stuff on the third floor as well. So that's what I've heard on that front, Mark. I haven't heard necessarily that what they're doing with the first team facility is also going to include the scoreboard. I will say also, Mark, that the scoreboard is kind of, it's a big lift in that it's shutting down a significant area that people can't be in order for it to happen. And it's not a, you can't really do it in piecemeal. It's the, you know, they're not retrofitting the scoreboard as I understand it, listeners. This is taking the old one out and putting the new one in. And so that's a big check, whereas doing a couple of pitches over the course of off seasons is not necessarily one huge check. And then also doing expanded locker room facilities or things like that is something, those are several smaller checks that Stan and Josh would have to write, whereas opposed to it would be one big one for the scoreboard. Similarly, I would say that would be that if they're doing anything on the south side as well. So that's what I've heard. So I still think, Mark, there's still some, there was some big talk in terms of everything that came out from last year in terms of upgrading the stadium, know that they need to do that, know that they need to improve the fan experience, and just coming up with some better scran and loading up season ticket holders with $20 of credit in order to try it was a really good, nice gesture. It was a really good step in the right direction. But it's kind of, you know, you're putting a Band-Aid over an open wound to what you said about the, you know, the old minimalist stadium that Dick's Sporting Goods Park is increasingly becoming. And I don't know that there's any immediate evidence that improving either the luxury experience so that the club can get more money from their executive level, you know, prawn and champagne people that are coming to games, or the, you know, the man in pub, judgmental gym, going to the tailgate and then getting a bar at Dale's at halftime. I don't know that that's necessarily something that they're working on directly. And this all kind of begets the fact, Mark, that it's been months now since the Victory Crossing, you know, student architecture competition would have been completed, and there would have been a winner and a grant awardee for that as well, and then some renderings, and there's been no rumblings from that. And so if something's happening outside on that big dirt lot, Mark, where you and I have seen hundreds of prairie dogs now that they've come back from the plague game in 2019, that, you know, if anything's happening, you know, if shovels are in the ground this coming summer or this coming spring, Mark, we're not looking at anything being open until probably 2025. And at this point, we're running into, if anything wants to be fully open and fully done for the World Cup in 2026, like, they need to have shovels in the ground by the time we kick off the MLS season in February, March. And there's not any indication right now publicly that that's something that's eminently likely. So it was good that the club actually listened. It was good that they set up a platform for fans to voice their concerns. It's my understanding that that was shared generally, maybe at a high level, with Stan and Josh. The club's taken some actions directly in order to mend that. But yeah, I think the skeptic or the curmudgeon Rapids fan, Mark, the Jason Maxwell, the you know, the John Boraz, who's looking at this of the Rapids could very easily sit on their laurels this offseason, make one or two mid-level signings, maybe bring an international player, rely on the draft, rely on some of the homegrowns to take a step up in 2025. Functionally, that Moise Bombito money is paying off ownership for the checks that they wrote for the two DPs, and the club comes out, lays an egg in Champions League. That puts them behind the eight ball. They struggle to make the playoffs or whatever, and then we're looking at the same cycle as well, and then there's no move at the stadium, and ho-hum, this is the exact same Rapids as we saw 2013, 2016, 2021, and now 2024. I'm not ready to say that. I'm simply acknowledging that this fan base still has a lot of PTSD that ownership and that the front office needs to take clear action in terms of trying to correct. There's indications that there's groundwork set up for them to do that. We have yet to receive the press release saying that this is actually going to be done. And in that, I can understand the fan base, the fan who is skeptical of that. At the same time, I can understand the fan who has, you know, hope springs eternal. And if the club makes one signing, they believe Chris Armas in his second year with this young group of players is going to be good. And that, plus some improved Scran and a still really good stadium and, excuse me, a really good tailgate experience, is sufficient for them to believe that the club's in the right direction. I do want to highlight, Mark, one individual who I think's done a lot of really good stuff. And I interviewed him earlier this summer, and I'm finally going to write something in the offseason with all this free time that I now have. Fernando Varela was brought in at the end of 2023 as the fan engagement specialist at the club, and he's done a very, very good job in terms of being an outlet for fans, not having really a transactional relationship or interaction, and in particular, he has targeted the Hispanic community. So what they've done with Hispanic Heritage Night, they've done a happy hour with that as well, Mark. They've done more Spanish language stuff. I'm sure you've heard on Apple TV when they do a stadium announcement in English. They now have Estrel Pinedo, who you and I remember, Mark, as the old Spanish language radio broadcaster, is now doing those announcements in Spanish. So we're getting that as well. And so that's something that you and I were harboring, you know, you and I were banging the drum for in 2018, 2019 of there is an untapped potential in terms of the Spanish language community in Denver, people west of Federal, that the club is not even, you know, extending an olive branch to, and the club's taking directions towards that. And I think we've seen that with the Locos. I think we saw that certainly with the Liga MX contingency we had and Spanish language Rapids fans going there to watch the Rapids, not just to watch the Liga MX team that was in place there. And if that's something they're doing in the first year, if they continue with that, that's has the potential to grow and is also a low-hanging fruit that doesn't require concrete and permits and people with hard hats and steel toe boots and vests and everything. Mark, what haven't I covered? What responses do you have to that?
I don't know that I have anything to add. I mean, I think you really covered it really, really well. All sorts of things, you know, just, I think in general, I'm happy with where the Rapids are with their fan base. All things considered, I think KSE is a corporate overlord who have demonstrated over and over again they don't really care that much about the fan. But I think the club under KSC does care about the fans and does understand who we are and why we love this team. I think a big change that like took a long time to get there, but was a Chris Armas change, was like coming out at the end of the final game and applauding the fans.
Yes.
And coming out to the end and giving C-38 their love. I think there was a little bit of minor controversy. I don't know if we ever talked about this, that Georgi Mihailovic kind of like didn't come over. And I think a couple of people were upset about that, but apparently he was just gutted that they'd lost and he felt really bad that he didn't perform very well. And, you know,
we covered that a pot or two ago. Mark, he apologized in his opening statement.
Yeah. But I didn't say anything about it. So, but yeah. So, I mean, I think just that's a cultural change. I think Chris Armas is a really warm, and loving guy, and I think he's created a good relationship with both the media and the fan base, and that's been a nice thing to watch. I know you had a little run in with him a couple weeks ago, but it sounds like everything is
we kissed
smooth.
And made up at Bergen.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, yeah. it seems like he kind of overwhelmingly kind of gets the whole gist of things. So it's good right now. I think we want to see progress. I don't think squeaking into the playoffs year after year is the bar that we want to set. You know, we're not Crystal Palace. We don't want to be Crystal Palace or Middlesbrough or I'm trying to think of Tottenham, you know, a mid-tier team in the English Premier League that are happy to be mid-tier. I mean, Tottenham's great hope every year is to squeak into the top six. Like that's what they want to do. And if they can make fourth, that's fantastic. Like Arsenal are disappointed that they're not winning the whole thing, but you know, they pretty much redundantly end up fourth. Whereas Norwich and Fulham are just happy to stave off yet another year of getting re-relegated again.
The Colorado Rapids are more aspirational than 13th place, yes. Manchester United.
Right. The Rapids can't drop into USL, but even if they could drop into USL, they don't want to miss the playoff, or they're not resigned to missing the playoff. There aren't any teams in MLS because of the price of owning an MLS team is so high, and the league club valuations are going up year over year by a ton. I don't think there's anybody in the league who's just absolutely complacent to be terrible. San Jose Earthquakes. San Jose's I think their management are unhappy with the situation. I don't think their ownership is thrilled, but that's a great question. By comparison, by the way, you've got teams in other sports where it's just like decades of mediocrity. Like Dan Snyder finally got kicked out as the Washington Commanders owner this year, and so maybe they have a hope, but like otherwise it's hopeless. Here in Pittsburgh, the Pirates have been under 500 I think for 6 years in a row, and the owner doesn't care at all and never shows up to games, and like the fans here are furious, and it's really kind of like a huge scandal here in Pittsburgh. But like I don't know that there's a team like that in MLS, and that's a good thing. And I don't think the Rapids are like that, and that's a good thing.
Have the Colorado Rapids, from a players and a coach's standpoint, repaired the bridges and mended things with the fans and understood them? You know, yes. Have we seen that from a front office rhetoric and a front office interaction? I would say for the most part, yes. Has ownership done that, Mark? TBD. We'll find out. We'll see what happens given what the club activity looks like in January, especially given they didn't do much in the summer, Mark, other than Reggie Cannon, free agent, and then made Rafael Navajo a permanent transfer. And then obviously there's still bigger questions that are going to need to happen that don't need to happen right now. But yeah, every single year that they don't do anything with the Sporting Goods Park, fans are going to continue to gripe and be frustrated with that. And this is a stadium that is going to continue to lag behind with each new expansion team or each new upgrade or renovation of a stadium. So we'll see what happens. Let us know your thoughts, listeners. We'd love to know your thoughts on whether or not you feel the club has repaired things, or you know, you've accepted the apology, and whether or not you've received or not, or what more you would like to see from them, and not just the, hey, build a brand new stadium that's downtown Denver right next to the can, and build a, you know, a brand new training facility and spend a, you know, $100 million on bringing, you know, Neymar or Kylian Mbappe to Major League Soccer. We'd love to hear from you. Mark, should we land this plane?
We have talked a lot, but we said good things, as we do every week.
Listeners, follow us on the social media platforms. You can find us either at Rapids96 Podcast or at Holding the High Line. You can read Mark's work on our Substack, including the piece that I just alluded to earlier, the 2024 Rapids by the Numbers, which I will link in
the
show notes.
It's the greatest article ever, if you like expected goals. NG+, the goals added.
You can find that at holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can support us financially for about $40 to $50 a year. And you can renew your membership as well and get yourself locked in for the merch that we have that we're very excited about that's going to happen in Q1 2025. You can read my written work at burgundywave.com. Email us your questions, comments, other stuff at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. And tell James Chambers, Chambo, about us so that he can listen to us and confirm that, in fact, a Colorado Rapids podcast does occasionally think about Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Listeners, last thing that we'll say before we get out of here, Wednesday the 27th at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so 11 Mountain, is the deadline for clubs to inform the league about their offseason moves. Rabbi and I would have spoken last podcast about the players who are up for options, who are free agents, and what that looks like and everything. So, Mark, are we podding next week, Mark? I think if they release stuff Monday, we might do stuff Monday. I'm getting on a plane Wednesday night, so if they do it at the deadline, it's going to have to wait till the week after Turkey Day.
All good, man. It sounds good to me.
Yeah. At some point, listeners, before the first full week of December, we will podcast about what the roster news looks like and what that means for the club going forward. And it will be, Mark, after, I think it's December 11th, after MLS Cup is when we'll get news about the expansion draft as well. So there could be some implications there. Should San Diego FC select a Colorado Rapids player, and then we're into transfer window, free agency, draft, and other stuff. We will podcast periodically when there is news. I do have a couple of interviews, Mark, that I'm looking at that will probably be dropping over the holidays. So I think we'll keep the, especially Mark, with Boxing Day also being the first night of Hanukkah, I think it would be timely for us to reprise our big interview that we drop on Christmas Eve, so that listeners have something to listen to while they're driving through the snow to go see the. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Peace.